Welcome to the Snowfighters Institute podcast, featuring conversations with leaders in professional snow and ice management about what's working, what's challenging, and what matters most in our industry. Here's your host, Phil Harwood.
Hey, welcome back, Snowfighters. I am Phil Harwood, if we haven't met, and I'm joined today by our special guest, Cam Roberts. Cam is the president of Laser Pavement Solutions. And we were just talking about what his official title is on his business card. And he said president, but really it's just main dude. So we have the main dude from Laser Pavement Solutions here with us today, Cam Roberts. Cam and I got to know each other through Snowfighters Institute. Cam coming to our events and getting involved, and then through our peer groups as well. And Cam's a great guy. He's up in the Great White North up in Canada. Cam, why don't you say hi?
Man, thank you for having me on. That's a great intro. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm excited to hear about your snow business and how your winter's been going so far, and also your pavement solutions business. And I think you're doing some podcasting, so we'll get into that a little bit too.
I cannot wait to tell your listeners how not to run a snow business for the first 3 years. Can't wait.
Give us the quick lay of the land. So where are you located, and give us the quick intro. Tell us about your business.
For sure. Yeah. So the 1 minute version of me and the business. So Great White North is correct. So we're the West Coast people. So we're in British Columbia. I'm basically smack dab in the middle of the province. So all the population's down in Vancouver. We're kind of in the middle. The more north you get, the more less populated it gets. Beautiful place I live in. I love the place. We've been here for 6 years now. I moved the business here 6 years ago. And it's, you know, I'm an hour away from the beautiful Rocky Mountains. So the business that we have here, like I said, I moved it here in just before COVID, the end of 2019. We used to, and I say we, back then it was me, used to just be involved in parking lot striping. That's how the business started. In fact, the business was called Laser Line Painting. That's kind of what we were known for. And as the years go by, it becomes a lot more interesting, unique, a lot more services we do, a lot different focus. So the big ones being snow removal has been added into that, which is now a massive part of our business, and pavement maintenance during the summer. We keep parking lots maximized for their value all year round.
So you say you moved the business. Where was it located?
Yeah, surprisingly, it was even more north. So I'm, you know, slowly migrating to where I should be. Yeah, Phil, I grew up in like this small town in northern British Columbia, like 20,000 people, super cold, super windy. I was there for like 25 years. And so that's where I started. I was there for I started the business and was there for 2 years, you know, before my family and we relocated to slightly warmer climates.
Well, that's cool. And I'll tell you what, for anyone who's listening, if you've never been to British Columbia, it is so beautiful. It's just amazing. I had the opportunity to go up to Whistler one time and do the Peak to Peak. And in the winter, it was so beautiful. It was amazing. Yeah. I'm a hockey player, not a skier. So we didn't ski. And it was really cold. I don't know if I would have skied anyway, but it was super cool to do the gondola up the mountain and then go from one mountain to the other and then back and back down. It was super cool. But the drive up was just unbelievable. It's just gorgeous.
Agreed. Yeah, it's pretty spoiled. So, I'm about 6 hours from there. It's awesome.
If anyone's been listening to these Snowfighter podcasts before, they will know that I like to delve into people's backgrounds. Why don't we start with that? Where'd you come from? What were you doing in school? And how did you get here? If you can give us that in a few minutes.
Yeah, no, fair enough. So I've been asked this, right? And I feel like I'm incrementally getting better at trying to make, even for myself, the connection between where I came from and why I do what I do, because in many ways, they don't seem to align. I will give you the short version. So yeah, I was born in the big city in Vancouver. Dad was a government worker. When I was 4 years old, they said either, you know, take a layoff or go up north. And so he chose up north. So away we went. I was a kid. So I grew up in this small town, there's nothing extraordinary, right? Like dad was government. Mom was a stay-at-home mom. Life was super, super low key, middle class. Everything's good. So I don't really have anyone in my family who's like the major, the risk taker, the entrepreneur, so to speak. But like I said, I feel like I'm slowly kind of making the connections a little bit to where it might come from. But I spent my 20s, you know, I like to joke that my first real job that really challenged me, I took a job in facility maintenance and absolutely loved it. Loved facility maintenance. And so my early 20s, I was learning, just devouring information on, you know, buildings and how things work. And the thing I got exposed to was hiring contractors, right? Being in a northern community, you don't have a lot to choose from. So I got to see some good, absolutely, but also got to see a lot of, you know, there's no one else to hire. It's funny. I remember even at a young age, man, like 23, 24, thinking to myself, like, there's no way, even in this small town, right? There's no way this should be the only reliable contractor,
whatever it is,
name, but like, yeah, I'm just thinking like, this is crazy. These guys make so much money and like, I don't think they're that professional. So that kind of got rooted in me and I've no doubt taken that with me over the years.
So this was a company you were working for or a contractor or what was the situation?
It was a company. Yeah. They had one property in this town. It was the shopping mall, right? So it was, you know, not
okay.
You could, Phil, you could stand in one end and look down and still see the other end of the inside of the shopping mall. So it's not.
I understand.
We're not talking Mall of America.
But it still had to be maintained.
It was 30 years old when I started. Okay. And yeah, there's always.
And what was your job? What was your very first job there?
So I signed on. My job title was like maintenance assistant, essentially.
Okay.
And I thought it was funny because like dad was sneaky smart. Like, he's government, right? So that's how I know him, is office job 8 to 5, yada, yada. But he knew stuff, man. He was in the parks department his whole career. And when he started there, he knew how to build stuff. My brother and I just never saw him do it. So I don't resent, this is going to sound like I resent it, but I don't. Like growing up, we never got exposed to like renovation projects, working with tools, you know, definitely no contractors, nothing like that. So my dad is sneaky smart though, because he had a lot of that experience. So I remember vividly, man, when I took that maintenance job and I'm being exposed to like everything from plumbing to electrical to drywall to, you know, hydrovacs, all this stuff I didn't know anything about, completely overwhelmed. I'm like, I totally shouldn't be here. And in the span of 3 years or 4 years, I guess I managed to, by the end of that 4 years, when I was working for this company at this one property, I was borderline trying to break stuff just so that I could like see how to fix it. You know what I mean? Like, not actually, but
right. Know,
the chaos didn't bother me at all. I was actually quite, quite invigorated.
You were inquisitive.
Oh, yes.
You had a mind that wanted to learn. Where did you go from there?
So that company sold, so they gave me a nice little modest severance, which got us our first very modest house, which was kind of exciting at 25 years old. Mm-hmm. From there, I went to the glass trade. I was there in the glass industry for also four years. Dude, that was going to be my forever job.
Really?
The company I went to, just loved them to death. Family company. Mm-hmm. My wife had worked there before I worked there, so I knew about them quite a bit. They were the company we hired at the mall. They were just top shelf company, man. Just so good. So that was going to be my forever home.
What did they do? What kind of glass?
A little bit of everything, right? Small town. They were diverse, but by far the division I was involved in and their largest revenue, I'm sure, was their commercial aluminum. So a lot of storefront doors.
Yeah. Got it. Were you installing or what were you doing?
I was. They hired me with no experience. I conned them into hiring me because they liked me. That was fine though. They trained very quickly there. I was in a truck by myself after 3 months and they go fast. Mm-hmm. A lot of discomfort. I was installing until I decided to chop my fingers off on the table saw in 2018 upstairs. Yeah. So that actually was the wrench that sparked everything else going on in my life, including starting, you know, my own pavement business. So yeah, don't recommend that for your listeners.
Wow. Though.
Don't do it.
So you loved it because you said you thought it was your forever job. You just loved the work. Yes. Or what was it about it that made you think that?
It was, I believed in them. So I loved the work. Absolutely. Glass was cool. And to be clear, like I was never going to be the best installer, right? Like our foreman could easily outwork me, even though he was much older than me. Like I was an okay installer. I had an eye for it a little bit, but what I really was interested in was like, this is a cool business, right? I knew they had plans to grow and maybe expand it in new places. And I was like, I want to be a part of that, man. Like, let's make this thing better. So much so, like, I remember, I'm not going to go into a long story, but I do remember, like, there was one project in particular where, again, I won't go into the details, but it was just the way the crew was executing, the type of products they were using. It didn't make sense to me. I thought it was, we were wasting money. And I remember, like, identifying things like that while I was working there, like, man, we could do this so much better. Mm-hmm. And generally they were receptive to that. Like, you know, they, you know, I'm being mindful that, you know, what 26-year-old comes up and says, we can do things better. Right.
Right.
There's, you obviously,
still, you were showing an owner's mentality, you know, which is fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe missing some of the perspective that I might have now as a business owner, but I wanted to move fast and faster than they were willing to let me move. So I decided ultimately that year I had the accident is when I started. I bought a line painting machine, and that's by the end of that year, basically, I was like, I'm going to go out on my own.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. Who was your first client?
The old shopping mall where I used to work.
Perfect. Yeah.
Nice. That's actually why I chose line painting too, is because there was one guy in town who painted parking lots. And Phil, if you ever met him, you would laugh. Like, it was quite shocking.
So you knew there was an opportunity.
I didn't know anything about striping, but I knew there was an opportunity.
That's fantastic. Well, and it's so smart, you know, I think that's some of the advice, you know, I've given out in my consulting career when people are exploring different service offerings, and I say, well, go to some of your clients and talk to them and say, hey, considering getting into, you know, line striping, do you have a good line striper? And if they say, oh my gosh, we have the best line striper, I would, you know, then you're like, okay, cool. But if they say, oh, there's one moron in town, we have to use him because there's nobody, ding, ding, ding. Okay, we're going into line striping. So it's that simple. So good for you. And then, so how long ago was that?
Started that in 2018. That was the mega year, man, of accidents and starting businesses. Yep.
Wow. Okay. So not all that long ago. What, 7 years ago? Yeah.
Feels like nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then at what point did you start thinking about snow?
Snow removal was never going to be part of my plan ever. And it was because of my experience at that mall, right? That was... I saw what, you know, it was a pretty large parking lot, like 500,000 square feet, so decent size for a small town. And I remember the agony, Phil, like the agony my boss would go through looking at invoices, comparing hours, you know, trying to get them to show up on time. This wasn't done right. This is too icy, like all this stuff. And I was like, what a nightmare business to be in. Mm. And so in 2020, my business was growing very quickly. I hired a business coach because I was completely overwhelmed. And he was in the States, South Carolina. And he said, well, I presume it snows there. So how come you don't do anything in the winter to generate revenue? Right? Long winters up here, right? I told him I would never do snow. I hated it. I wanted nothing to do with it. Too much chaos, unpredictable, cost of insurance. I basically gave him the whole spiel, man. And probably one of the greatest lessons I've ever learned in business was what he told me after, which was he systematically reframed everything from, you know, the owner operator mentality, I have to do this myself, to why don't you build a business with a foundation that executes that, you know, on behalf of what the owner's vision is. So I decided to go along with it.
Wow. That's a leap of faith into something you didn't want to do.
An expensive, very costly first year leap of faith. Yeah.
And so how long ago was that?
The first snow year was the COVID year, 2020.
Okay. Yeah. So you're really new in this still.
Gosh, Phil, feels like yesterday. Yeah. I try to learn.
So fast forward to today. Tell us about your snow business today. What's the status of that? And then also Laser Pavement Solutions. Like where are you at today?
Yeah. I will say this. I will answer your question directly. I will not waste time, but I will say this. Mm-hmm. That first year was hilariously bad, like too late in the sales process, you know, poor execution of the sales process relative to what I should have been doing, poor equipment acquisition, but just you name it. The model was going to be, let's sub out to people. That's not common in my market. So there was barriers mm-hmm. there. So all in all, that first year just lost just a pile of money, which was okay because the company was so small. I mean, it was literally mm-hmm. just me and basically one other person. So we've come a long ways because the snow program now is a lot different. It's taken a lot of trial and error, I would say, an investment into learning. I've become completely enthralled with snow. Like, it is such an operational challenge. It's very difficult, but it's also solvable. And that's one thing I've really come to appreciate. So today we're one of the, certainly not the largest. There's a lot of like some industrial type snow contractors here that do some unique things in different industries. But as far as commercial work, we're certainly one of the larger ones. Our model is somewhat unique in that the majority of our equipment is rented during the winter. We have great relationships with rental programs here. A lot of front end loaders are in the fleet that get rented, and our bread and butter, ironically, is our favorite customer is one of the more difficult ones. It's multi-tenant retail. We love shopping malls. It's hard. You got to keep 50 tenants happy instead of just one, but
you've come full circle back to the shopping center.
There we go. Never thought of that before. Yeah, maybe that's why. Well, mm-hmm. So we've leveraged a lot of technology and innovation to help us with that. And again, mm-hmm. invested, man, dude. By the end of like 2022, you know, 2 years into snow or 2-3 years, I was like, I don't want to keep doing it this way. Something's got to be done better. And I was so committed to figuring it out. So that's when I really started investing in the education side.
So commercial self-performing.
100% self-performing.
Yeah. You said loaders, not ag tractors.
No tractors.
Got it. Okay. Pusher boxes.
Mixture. Metal Plus is big for us. We've started investing mm-hmm. there. Yeah. And pushers. Yeah. Mix of some buckets and blades. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned technology. What are some of the things that stand out to you that have really been helpful?
Yeah. If anything, you know, on the spectrum of not, you know, not using technology enough or going too far. I probably mm-hmm. skew on the too far side. I try to make sure we're balanced. We don't just get tech for the sake of getting it. But
and it's okay if you want to share brand names too. We like shout outs to brands that, you know, so yeah.
Very good. Excellent. Yeah. So one of the big ones for us as it stands now is it's not a snow specific one actually, but Basecamp is a project management mm-hmm. software. It's been so pivotal for us. Because we've identified early on, you know, I would say 2024 in particular, like we have to win on the communication front with our customers. So that's one of the lessons I actually learned from, mm-hmm. from you and a few others is you almost can't over communicate. You got to set a good expectation. So technology is a big part of that for us. You know, we don't have 1,000 customers, but we have enough where it would be not feasible or comfortable to phone every one of them. So how do we solve that, right? Basecamp is that solve for us. Every project we have, every property has its unique project. It can be anchored under one customer if needed, but we can just filter communication to them very openly and transparently. But more importantly, they can actually get invited into that software. So instead of, you know, whether it's a service request, a billing request, an alteration to the, you know, the scope of work immediately gets shown to everyone in our company who needs to see it. So that's been huge for us.
That's really interesting. I haven't heard anyone talking about Basecamp in years. And I don't know if I've ever heard anyone in the snow industry talking about Basecamp being used in their operation. That is really interesting.
I mean, we're open to something different if needed, because it's not lost on me for the snow. It's not a mm-hmm. snow-specific software, but mm-hmm. man, if you can find a software that solves the communication. For us, that's mm-hmm. like, it's almost
for sure. Battle sometimes. No, that's fantastic. Thank you. Yeah. Is there anything else that stands out as far as technology? That like is your go-to that you just love and gush about?
Well, like I've told you this, like I'm the sales guy, not the ops guy, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to be involved in the operations in the day-to-day as much, definitely in the sales side. I do. So, for us, it's been a big key for us growing the business with the snow division specifically has been using a good CRM, but I don't know how to define that. I would say a CRM system that serves the function we need it to. And that's been so critical for us. So we're HubSpot people. We used to have a software very similar. I'm very bullish on those types of technologies, man. I mean, you know, to grow a business, you know, your sales, your process, your cycle, timing, organization, it's got to be on point, even in a smaller market like where we are, right? Like you got to stay organized. And that's been so huge for us. You got to get a CRM.
Yeah. Yeah, HubSpot, I've just heard such great things about it. I know there's some setup involved and, you know, there's a commitment to using any software product. And certainly there's a commitment to using HubSpot, even if it's just for one person. But if it's in a larger organization, you know, there can be a little bit of a lift to get it in place. But man, you need something. You know, you can't do this without, you can't sell effectively without something to back you up and keep you on point, like you said. No, that's really good. Thank you for that. Have you always been kind of a sales-focused person?
Like always.
Just, yeah, I can tell. Yeah.
And it's funny, man. Like I'm pretty brutally open about stuff, like good and bad. So I'll tell you the good first. So yeah, I was able to grow the company very quickly. Like we got to the 7-figure mark relatively quickly, considering I started in 2018 out of a minivan with no idea what I was doing. And I'll tell you a funny lesson I learned. Like I can't even remember the first place I heard it, but I remember being mad when I heard this thing. I heard somebody say, you know, it's not hard to get a service company to sell $1 million. And I heard that well before I got to 1 million. And I remember being upset, Phil. I was like, how dare you? That actually sounds like a lot of work. And that's kind of rude. But now I see the point of it now. It truly isn't that difficult. Like you can just sell a lot of contracts. And so for us, that's me. I had no problem growing the company and being the primary sales guy. That's what I love to do. The problem with that is you can grow a company on a top line basis very quickly, particularly when you add snow. And if it's not showing up at the bottom, it's a lot of flashy top line stuff with nothing to show for it. And we suffered in that spot, man, for a long time.
What kind of got you out of that?
For us, there was no magic bullet to fixing, you know, a profitability issue. But if I had to rank the hierarchy, it had to start with getting the right people. And I was very fortunate, you know, this is something because I do work with other payment business owners under $1 million in revenue. I work with them one-on-one. This is one thing I encourage them to do is, you're not going to be able to attract the great talent that you need in your company unless you give them a reason to. And that could be as simple as for what it was for me, talking about what I was doing, like successes and failures, and sharing it online relentlessly. What that allowed me to do, the long story short, is I found people, one in particular, who approached me and said, I like what you're doing. I see what you're trying to do. And I want to be a part of that. And I told this person at the time, we ain't ready for you. This is like, you're worth well north of 6 figures and I'm a, you know, growing company. But I did end up hiring that person 4 months later and he's now our GM. And like, I'm thinking about it now, Phil, like looking back to 2022, 2023, hyper fast revenue growth relative to a small market. That's the single greatest thing. You need to get somebody in there who can hold people accountable, really, really build out process. That's not my strong suit. I'm not a micromanager. I want to give people autonomy, and that's a great quality, but you need to balance that with accountability, because autonomy without accountability is just a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's great. Are you an EOS company? Are you running on EOS?
Oh, EOS. I said the U.S. Not yet. We're coming to the U.S. soon, my friend.
That's a big jump.
I am a big fan of the EOS system.
I thought you were. Yeah. Talk about that for a minute. How has that affected your business?
Yep, for sure. So integration was 2024. The decision I made was to self implement, which I can neither recommend nor recommend against. It's very hard, and I can see why a lot of companies would fall off, so to speak, trying to self-implement. But for all the previous reasons that I just discussed, I thought, you know, getting an implementer here would be great, but very costly. And I don't mind putting in the sweat labor, essentially, to figure it out. And so me, especially being a tech guy, we've actually put out content about this before on our YouTube. Like I did some pretty unique technology hacks, I guess you'd call them, in order to really learn the system. Because as you know, like Phil, you can't just read the book once and be like, now I can do this. So I built a fairly elaborate AI system to help me out with it. But that has been so important. So important. I would say we embraced EOS very early relative to the size of companies that probably would. Mm-hmm. It's given us such a strong foundation, and kind of the validation I would say for that is, you know, again, my GM, he's 60 now, you know, he's worked across many different industries, really great track record running operations. He's come in to see that system, which is built for, you know, squirrel brained founders out of minivans like me, built for those people. And he's been very, like, a big breath of fresh air for him. He really appreciates it.
You also have been involved in Snowfighters. What are some of the other associations are you getting that you've been involved in or currently, when you look at maybe 2026, like, are there certain conferences you're planning to go to? Maybe even in the pavement industry, maybe you're involved in there too. So what's kind of, where are you headed to next in terms of like industry? Where are you finding value in terms of resources out there, whether it's associations or training platforms or whatever? Kind of talk to us about that.
Yeah, I am incredibly bullish on education and mentorship. Like, I've had it since 2020. I've tallied it up, you know, in our QuickBooks, just how much has been spent on education, and it's so much money, but it's all worth it. So I do, you know, our company's kind of funny, right? I'm sure this is similar to landscape companies, although I don't landscape, so I don't know, but it does sometimes feel almost like two different companies, right? The pavement side, especially here in Canada, we have a pretty short pavement season. So we have basically 7 months of that, and then we pivot hard to snow. So it does kind of feel like two companies. So the education that I take, and what I'm going to take in 2026, I try to make it as specific as possible. So there's definitely pavement specific conferences right around this time of year. I'll be flying out soon to one big one in New Orleans. I will not miss those. They're very, very helpful. Broadly speaking, there's one organization that's not pavement specific, but I've been involved with them for quite some time, called the Top Contractor School, which I love. And Phil, I'm looking at you on my screen. I have no obligation to say this. You didn't ask me to say this. I'm saying this out of the truth of my heart, my friend, but getting involved with the Snowfighter Institute, we wouldn't be in snow if it weren't for you guys, man. Like, I would have given up. I would have said, this is too much to try and figure out on my own. Like, I'm stubborn, right? I would, but I would have made the ROI decision. Like, I something isn't working and I don't know what that is. That first event we went to, David and I, in 2023, was just like so eye-opening in so many ways. Like, it shook my world in a good way of what it could be.
Love
like.
It. So, yeah.
Yeah. Keep it up.
Thank you for that. That's great to hear. Well, I mean, you tapped into something, which is a whole bunch of other contractors who have either made the mistakes you were going to make, but probably made those same mistakes, learned from it, and are willing to share their experiences with other people. And that was really what was happening on the peer group calls too. It's like, just on a monthly basis, like, hey, here's what I'm dealing with. What do you guys know? And everybody says, oh yeah, I know. I have a app for that. And, you know, someone has the solution that you need. And it's a great industry. I love the industry because there's so much of that going on. And Snowfighters is just such a special place. I'm super grateful to be involved in it. So thank you very much. I also want to hear about your content creation, because I think you're like doing some podcasting and stuff, and I don't really know that much about what you're doing there. Can you share with us what you're doing?
Fair enough. Yeah. We don't talk about snow too much on there. A little bit. There are some of our audience is involved in snow. Yeah. I'm going to give you the long story short. My first business coach, the one who encouraged me to get into snow. Love that guy. I don't work with him now, but still tremendous respect. That was one of the initiatives he threw on my wall, so to speak, on the vision wall in 2021. I remember it was early. He said, is there anyone in line striping? He said, who do you look up to for content and, you know, podcasts and things like that? And I said, there's people I look up to, but there's definitely no one with a podcast. That's how it started. He said, you must be the one. And I said,
Blue Ocean.
I've been in the industry for 3 years. I don't think I'm the one, but I tried it anyways. Uh-huh. I drug my heels a little bit, but I finally, I've now come to learn, as you know, time goes on. We learned a lot, like the art of starting a podcast, which I had created in my mind being a very difficult, elaborate endeavor, is really just buying a $40 mic and recording. Now, to make it great is another thing, but that's how it started. You know, I went into my wife's studio that she owned and recorded after hours. And so the long story short is that's how it started. The podcast, am I wearing the shirt? I'm not. The podcast is called Stripe It Like It's Hot.
Nice.
I used to just talk about striping. Now we're 100 and what are we, Matt? 151. 151 episodes in. Yeah. So now it's become a lot more, it's very focused now. It's a podcast and an education company, truthfully, for pavement business owners under $1 million in revenue who are trying to grow with a strong foundation.
Nice. Love it. Love it. Stripe it like it's hot.
Yeah. I want people to get to $1 million without bleeding money. I did. That's what I want.
I love it. I love it. I didn't ask you about your family. I know you're married and you have some kids. Yes,
I do. Yeah. My wife, she's the absolute bomb. She's like, she's just pushed me the whole way and supportive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Robin, we were married very young. We've been married for 15 years now.
Congrats.
We have three daughters, man.
Nice. All right.
The oldest is almost a teenager. Should be a lot of fun. Yeah.
You got to pay for all those weddings. So you better bring some cash in the snow booze. what else you want to share with our listeners here?
Can I share my
biggest? Go ahead.
I will stay.
No, I was going to say either biggest mistake or biggest regret, or maybe biggest thing you're proud of, depending on the connotation you want to, or the angle you want to go down here.
Sure. Well, ironically, I think the thing I'm most proud of is actually what I was going to talk about anyways.
Good.
And to be clear, I'm not. I just, there's no other way to say it. I'm obsessed with how do we build a team of people who are moving forward in a unified direction. That's everything to me. Like it's half my job, if not 80% of my job now. I'm not the chief sales guy. I'm not the chief ops guy. Thank goodness. You know, I'm not the chief cook and bottle washer anymore, but all of my thinking, my energy, my focus, or at the very least a large percentage of it is centered on how can I make the company be the vehicle that gets people to where they want to go. I see something really funny. Like we've put out content on this recently. I see it. We're in the AI era and I'm all for it. I'm very bullish. I've taken courses. I study it. I love, like, dude, I just took a long course on how to write prompts better, like just goofy. Mm. But I see a trend in pavement and I bet you it's the same in snow. And so I'm hoping somebody who hears this goes, oh yeah, that's me. I see this trend where we've learned to outsource a lot of our administrative tasks to AI, which is fantastic. You cannot outsource your leadership ability to AI. And I don't care if your company is like 1 million or 100 million, like you cannot abdicate that responsibility to people. And so some of the clients that I work with one-on-one, they've embraced AI. They're using it to move their companies quickly. And I do see them trying to shortcut a little bit. I see them trying to solve human issues in a manner by using AI to basically solve the problem for them. And I don't think it's effective. I was already optimistic and bullish on leadership before, but I'm really doubling down and I'm doing a lot. And I'm sure it's the same with snow companies, you know, as it is in pavement. Like, especially if you're at the $1 million mark around there, like, you have to invest time, energy, effort, sacrifice into helping your people, and you cannot shortcut it. It's so important.
Well, and it's so personal as well. One of the things my business owner consulting clients ask me on a regular basis as they get to know people is, you know, what should my job be? You know, what should I be doing as the owner? I'm doing all these things, but if I stop doing them, what should I do? What's my role? Where do I fit in? I wish I knew where I got this from or who I could give credit to for this, because it's not mine. But at some point I heard someone talking about the answer to this question, and I've held on to the answer. And I love this because it's really simple and it's exactly what you just said. So there's two items. So I say, when a CEO says, well, what's my job? Or if you're using EOS, what's the role of an integrator versus the visionary? If I'm just a visionary, what am I doing? And so in the EOS world, there's a job description for a visionary. But I think it's two things. And this is what I want to share here. Reinforce the culture. Protect the culture. Okay? Talk about the why. Talk about leadership. You know, bring that leadership piece to your organization. So that's number one, protect and reinforce the culture of your company. It has to start at the top. The second thing is go find talent. Look for future talent.
Dude,
talent that you need 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, 5 years from now. Get those people queued up. Get them ready to go. Get them hungry. If you meet with someone once a quarter for lunch, you will have them so prime. And you can say, I'm not ready for you yet, but I will be next year. So get ready. Tell your wife you're going to quit your job 9 months from now. I'm going to need you. I don't need you today. But man, now I got all this talent just like ready to go. And now I have confidence I can grow because I got my people. I just don't have them yet, but they're ready. They're hungry. I got them all lined up. So that takes time. And you can't do that when you're in the weeds. Those are my two things. So there you go. And I think you touched on both of those. So I love it.
I agree with both of them completely. So that one hire that I was able to get in 2023, when I originally told him, I'm not ready for you. I literally told him on the phone, I was like, Scott, you should be a consultant, man. Like, he had just come out of big business, big provincial utility company, and just like, you know, just not wrecked, but as someone would leaving 10 years at a large provincial utility company. And I was like, man, we just ain't ready for you. And if I could go back in time, I would, you know, we ended up working together 4 months later, but I would have made that decision right then. And I completely agree with you. Like, oh man, you need exceptional people to help you grow your business. Like your whatever you have, that natural talent, you know, the owner mentality, the owner bump, as I like to call it, it will get you to a point. Absolutely. But it's funny too, you mentioned what you said about being a visionary versus the integrator. Like, the integrator lives in today, right? This is what that today.
Yes.
Make sure today is good. Through a bizarre set of circumstances, Phil, which I'm not going to get into, like, we are very short staffed at this particular moment, and thankfully it's going to get better next week. So for the last, this is 11 days now where I've been out of necessity to people being away and all sorts of things. I've had to be living in today, like being very involved, making sure that our foremen are good. The snow operations is okay, right? Just, we have somebody kind of helping from a distance. But for 11 days now, I've had this internal, like, I guess you could just call it frustration. Like, I'm just not happy because my time needs to be spent worrying about tomorrow, not today. So anything that I can do that gets me out of today, that's the way I explained it to my EA, was like, it's very, very difficult for me to be work on things that are happening today.
We have great people. You just know you're in the wrong seat. So you're willing to do it it's your company. You're not, you have to do it sometimes, but it's not where you're supposed to be. So yeah. Cam, thank you so much. This was awesome.
A pleasure.
Have a great rest of the winter. I know we'll be talking to each other about different things. So keep in touch, but thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing yourself with us, and just really appreciate you, brother.
All my pleasure. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Snow Fighters Institute podcast. Subscribe so you don't miss future episodes, and check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com.